price of improvement is failure. Welcome to Liquid Philosophy. What are you drinking there?
I got the rest of the Saison.
Oh gosh, you want us to put those in Jeremy's iceless cooler?
Yeah. Jeremy's iceless cooler.
It's got ice.
It's got one ice cube.
It's got an ice block. Sat in the car, sorry.
Well, last time it sat in the car, it was a lot cooler. So.
Yeah.
What's the surprise?
All right, so I'm getting ready by attempting to figure out what my questions are.
Uh-oh.
Thankfully, I know a little bit about Tom, so I know what I'm going to say for my intro.
All right. Is this from, are these from Pryor or something?
Those are from Pryor.
Did
you get to try some?
No.
Wait.
No.
Oh, okay. But you do have to drink some.
Yeah, right.
It was just
nobody
my
leaves
birthday,
until these are all
so.
Gone.
All right. Oh my God.
It was just my birthday, and we made some beer battered fish using that beer.
Oh. So you were the outside member on the committee that hired me. What were you thinking? What were you thinking? No answer.
Justin, I'll have to say one thing.
Yes.
I remember. But he did. He just grabbed me when we interviewed him.
Gave him $100.
Literally or
gave
figure?
Him $100.
Yeah, right.
But I had a sense of, you know, just the way he, I could just see. Well, you guys especially, yeah.
I mean, and that's, I struggle with that in terms of teaching. Like, how do I teach that ability? It's just practice, right?
Yeah.
Which I think a coach would probably say, too.
I talk about it like with ballerinas and muscle memory, is that you do practice it over time. When you ask a ballerina to do a pirouette, they don't even have to think about it. They just do it.
Yeah.
When you ask me to speak in public, I don't even have to think about it. You can like stick a quarter in me and stand me up in front of an audience and I can do it. You know?
I'll attest
to that. That's great.
Cheap date.
Well,
cheap date.
Here we are.
Hey, it's election day too. There's a primary
well,
that, going on.
Well, that's
I haven't is. Like this is. I better get going
right.
because
yeah,
I still have yet to vote.
You vote at the same place I do, though, right?
Yes, it's a usually pretty easy place to vote.
Nobody in
there.
I doubt. Yeah,
there's
the
eight people working.
Nobody. No.
Eight people working and me. And then I went, came back out with this, and I was like, "Yes, I'd like to vote."
I like to go in and sing "It's Civic Duty Time" to the tune of "Howdy Doody." And it always gives all of the election workers a big kick because they've been pretty bored most of the day. So.
Is that an actual song?
Like Howdy Doody Time? Like it's Howdy
no,
Doody
I know,
Time?
But yeah, civic
so,
duty
no, it's not. I just made it up. So I just walked in one day and I was feeling particularly
I didn't know if that was
patriotic.
I didn't
so
know if that was
like,
an R. Kelly song.
No, it's not right.
You can all see right. where this is going.
Right,
on
exactly.
That note.
On that note, in an effort to get to... the topic at hand,
which is
our summer special. Like, we technically wrapped our first season with our last guest, but
that's great.
We knew we had a great opportunity to interview Professor Tom Martinek, who is a professor in kinesiology at UNCG. And you were actually a recommendation. Dr. Michael Hemphill.
Oh, Michael,
messaged us and said,
partner.
Right? He said, you cannot end this season without interviewing Tom. And
well,
so,
that's nice.
Right. And so, welcome to Liquid Philosophy.
Thank you.
And so, we are going to be spending some time thinking and drinking with you today.
Sounds good.
And I am Marianne LaGreco, and I am an assistant professor. Oh, no, I'm not an assistant professor. I just mentioned Michael is an assistant professor. No, I'm an associate professor. They have not taken that away from me yet. In communication studies. right, yet. I don't know. Our first guest, Bob wants me to raise a little more hell while I'm at UNCG. So who knows? Maybe
though, well
right? As well I should. So anyway, I'm Marianne LaGreco, and with me, as always,
Jeremy Rinker from Peace and Conflict Studies,
Justin Harmon, Community and Therapeutic Recreation.
I do make you sound like my sidekick sometimes, so maybe I should start. Maybe
you're the ringleader.
I am not the ringleader. They all like to think that I am the ringleader.
She's
so.
Mom. We just call her mom.
No, that's even worse. that's how you're going to get me to accept the ringleader moniker. So, well, welcome, Tom.
Thank
we are
you.
Very
nice
happy to have
here.
You with
Thank
us
you.
Today. And like I said,
great
you were
company.
A recommendation. Hey, so,
yeah.
Well, we'd like to kick things off with a toast. So I'm great. Going to hand it off to Jeremy. He has got some choice words for us.
I don't know about choice words, but as a Peace Corps volunteer, I was in Kazakhstan and I did a lot of vodka drinking with toasts. And it usually started with na zdorovye, which is to your health, but also to happiness and being wealthy and kind. And so then at the end of the toast, most of the times people would say, Pete Pay, which is drink to the end. And I won't make you drink till the end, but cheers, na zdorovye.
Piet Pay.
Correct.
It's a good Ukrainian language. Cheers.
Cheers.
Here, I'm like across the table, like cha-ching. Right.
Air cheers.
Air cheers.
All right, so we're going to start with the segment we call Breaking the Seal, and I'm going to do the first couple, and Jeremy will hop in there at the end, and then we'll get into our core questions. So where did you get your PhD?
Boston University.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was back in 76.
All right, and What was that experience like?
It was a transformative experience, really. In Boston, we were involved with the desegregation of schools at that time. And my advisor was deep into that and got us all involved with it. We had an opportunity to be a part of transforming some of the schools, South Boston. Judge Arthur Garrity was the guy who was mandating these changes. So our idea was to provide some programming that would bring kids from different backgrounds, socioeconomic backgrounds, some from Brookline, Mission Hill schools. We brought them together and used movement as a vehicle to bring kids together and learn about each other.
So you've lived in Chicago and Boston.
That's right.
Which is a better sports city?
Oh, I'm a big Chicago fan.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
I will always
thank
be.
Thank you.
She and I are from
really
Illinois.
I was
really
worried that the answer was going to be Boston, and my heart was going to hurt.
So. No. But, you know, we did follow Boston's sports while we were there, and they were right. Actually, they were in the throes of the pennant race at that time. So.
Now, Cubs or Sox?
The Red Sox were.
No. I mean, you personally.
Oh, Cubs. I'm a big Cub fan.
Yeah.
Diehard. Yeah,
answer.
Sorry about that. Are you a Sox fan?
No, I'm a Cubs fan.
Oh, good.
We're,
right.
we're good.
Love
Tom.
You.
We're,
love you.
We are Marianne. On the page.
You sweetheart. Right.
So you played basketball in undergrad with a certain well-known public figure who spent some time in Chicago. Is that correct?
Yes, that's
okay.
true.
Would you like to tell us who that is?
Phil Jackson was a teammate of mine. I went to school at the University of North Dakota, played basketball there.
Uh-huh.
And Phil came in my sophomore year there, and he was recruited from Williston High School, North Dakota, and just one of these skinny, gangly kids, and Bill Fitch was my coach at that time. I don't think you know him, but he was coached after I left, and several years later, coached with the Boston Celtics and Cleveland Cavaliers, and but anyway, at the time when he was with me, he saw Jackson playing in a state tournament as a high school player. And I didn't think he was that good, to be honest with you. But Phil said, no, this guy's got it. Yeah, and he was a center, 6'8".
Yeah.
And so we took him aboard, and, you know, the rest is history. You know, he just, you know, blossomed.
Is he really the Zen master?
He's very different. He was very different then as he is as a coach with the, you know, with the Bulls. But he was good. He was fun to be with. You know, he just had a, you know, a way of kind of engaging everybody. And, you know, he was kind of a deep thinker. He was, and by the way, he was a heck of a baseball player. He was a pitcher for UND as well. Some people probably don't know that. But anyway, yeah, so we spent 3 years together playing ball, and that was it, yeah.
So which one of you, you or Phil Jackson, had a more positive impact on youth through sports?
That might be the best question
Well, Rodman, if you want to call him a youth, probably had a pretty good
good answer.
You know, but I don't know. You know, Phil did his thing, you know, and he was, you know, he's got such a great track record, but you know, I always feel, you know, you all have a certain role in life, and, you know, mine was, you know, trying to work with kids and try to do what you can with them. Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you realize you weren't going to the NBA?
Oh, God. Early.
What's your favorite adult beverage?
Right now, probably wine.
Red or white?
Does he have to choose?
I'm a big Chardonnay fan. Okay. Yeah, yeah, so, yeah. Well, but beer will do.
Okay. Cheers to that.
Cheers to that.
Cheers to that.
Here we go.
So one of the things we like to get our guests to do is talk a little bit about their research and their work, mm-hmm. but in a way that you would explain it to people who aren't academics. And mm-hmm. I imagine in the work that you do, you get to talk about it in a lot of different kinds of ways.
Yeah.
So how do you talk about it to people who aren't in academia?
We just tell, you know what I like to do is just tell stories about kids mm-hmm. that we work with. And so that's the best way. I don't have a
elevator
bar graphs or, you know, elevator speech, yeah, if you want to put it that way. So, you know, you tell what kinds of things have happened in terms of your dynamics with kids and, you know, what kinds of things you've found with them, how it's affected you. So stories, narratives,
yeah.
you know, coming from me is probably the best way to do it. And, you know, when you do that to other practitioners, they can relate to it and, you know, and you can get more discourse that way.
Yeah.
It's better than putting a bar graph in front of them.
I'm going to come back to the discourse question
yeah.
in a second.
Okay.
But first I want to ask, what's one of your favorite stories?
What's
one of your favorite stories to tell about your research?
Well, one of my favorite stories, okay, that's a good question. I would say the one that I always share with people is that you you never know when. There's this old saying. I don't know if you knew this rock singer. It was Ricky Lee Jones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Flying Cowboys.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, she had a song or a phrase, and it says, you never know when you make a memory.
Mm.
And I always hold on to that because when you're working with kids, the best you can do is plant seeds. And, you know, sometimes they'll pop up. You know, they'll blossom. And sometimes you have what they call sleeper effects later on in life.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm explaining that to my class or people who are interested in working with youth, I always tell a story about this young fellow I worked with, Kevin Bennett. And he was a student over in Mendenhall Middle School.
Mm-hmm.
And we started working with him, and then he went to Page High School. And he was the kind of kid that really worked hard. He was great with our kids. The program I run is I have a lot of high school kids helping me out run a program. And so anyway, Kevin just really tried, was one of my best leaders. And then he was going to graduate. And I said, Kevin, where do you want to go? And of course, everybody says, you want to go to college? You know, that's where you would like. And Kevin says, you know, I think I just want to go in the military. And so I said, well, that's great. You know, I think, you know, do where your heart says you need to go. And so he decided to go in the Air Force, and he ended up going to the Air Force. He became a weapons technician and served some years in Iraq and came back to South Dakota. There's an Air Force base there. And I hadn't heard from him at all. And then all of a sudden I got a phone call from Kevin. And this is in, I remember in the afternoon, I'm sitting there in my office, get a phone call, and he says, Tom, this is Kevin. And I says, great to hear from you. I haven't heard from you in a while. What's going on? He says, well, I'm back in the States. I just want to tell you, I'm at this Air Force base, and they want me to start a youth program.
Hmm.
And I want you to, what I'd like you to do, can you send me stuff that we did in our program?
Hmm.
And I thought that was such a great, uplifting thing because a lot of what we did was kind of values-based stuff. And that was just something that really grabbed me at the time. You know, here's a guy that's been overseas, serving our country,
mm-hmm.
asked to start a youth program and coming back to what we did. So the other story I could tell you, too, is, you know, part of our program, we had a mentoring component to our after-school program. And I was one of the mentors, and we used to mentor kids over at Hampton Elementary School. And I worked with a young gal. Her name was Trevonda, and she was a pistol, and she had all kinds of issues going on at school, but I always tried to work with her. And if you've ever mentored a kid, sometimes, you know, you can get with a kid and they'll connect right away. Mm-hmm. Travonda had those up and down days, and so one day I came in and she was off the chain. She just didn't want to do anything, and we sat there and it was kind of silence, and finally she said, "Tom, I don't think this is going to work." And so she shut me out. And so I went back to my office, to my little cubicle there, and you know, I thought about it and I said, "That's fine." And the next day those kids come in for a program that we run, and Travonda's in that program. And so we ran the program, kids get on the bus, and all of a sudden she's standing at the door. And she says, "Tom, I'm sorry it didn't work out. You know, let's try it again."
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just stuff like that just kind of keeps
you. How old was she?
She was a fourth grader at that time. Yeah,
that's pretty.
It was, yeah. That's what yeah.
That's pretty mature.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she just kind of caught me off guard. But you know, it's just kind of the stuff that kind of keeps you connected to the kind of work, you know.
And it's the stuff that sticks with you over time.
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So one more quick question with regards to your research. You are in a kinesiology department.
That's right.
And many of our listeners, particularly those who are academics, probably know what that is, but some of them won't. Can you explain a little bit about what kinesiology looks like, but then how you connect what you do to that?
Yeah. Well, you know, my wife just gave me a paragraph that explained. It was on our graduation brochure. And on kinesiology, and I said, "I don't need to read it, but I should have, because if I had known this question was coming up, I could have." But anyway,
explained it to us.
I'll give you a real Reader's Digest version. It's the study of movement, and movement can be conceived in a broad way. It can be the study of sport, it can be the study of biomechanics, it can be this working with injuries and how it affects movement. It can be the psychology of movement and all of this. So it's a broad area. And to be honest with kinesiology itself, the term, when I was going to school, and I don't know, Jeremy, when you were in school, whether this is true or...
we're a little younger than you.
Yeah. Anyway, kinesiology was a course. Mm-hmm. And it was a course... biomechanics. It was called biomechanics. So it was movement, but a very...
So let me ask you a question about the Pygmalion effect. What is it, and how did it affect your career?
Yeah.
Or how did it influence your career?
When I was hired at UNCG I was hired for teacher education. And that was to prepare teachers to work in schools. And so in doing that, I wanted to study it in different ways. And part of it was an extension of my research that I did for my doctorate. And it was working with kids that were basically from different social economic backgrounds and kids that were struggling in a lot of ways. And I started reading about, some of the work by Martin Seligman and Rosenthal's classic work, you know, The Pygmalion in the Classroom. And that just grabbed me, and I said, this is where we're at. I said, there's no more powerful force in terms of influencing kids' perceptions of themselves than how a coach or teacher interacts and communicates with them. Mm-hmm. And that just grabbed my attention. So I began to research that, and that was basically my stream of research. I did 15 years of that, looking at that phenomenon, and it... just taught a lot about what we do with kids, the dynamics of teacher-student interactions, the powerful force it has. And so that particular type of research that I did, which I had to publish like everybody does.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so you keep your job.
So right? I've been doing it as writing, so.
Got to write it up. And so that was my deal. But I did get to a point, Jeremy, where I was doing this research, going in, working with kids to a certain degree, but I really wanted it to come come alive a little bit more and be more applied. So I took those concepts into starting these after-school programs. And so that kind of was my backdrop to how I got into this type of work. And so the Pygmalion effect, which is basically, you get what you believe is there. And as a teacher, it's become self-fulfilling. So to get what you expect is kind of the central theme to what I was trying to do in terms of creating more of a expectation that kids are capable in different ways and how you communicate that in a way that is going to influence their self-perceptions is, I think, just kind of the central theme to what we do in our program right now.
Right.
So it's always been a backdrop to what I've done. It's a fascinating phenomenon, but right. It's there all the time, for all of us.
Now, you've taken some of this research foundation and used it to get involved with programs like the Middle College
at
UNCG. So can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved with the development of that program?
I can.
With a wince on your face?
Yeah. Is that a lesson?
The Middle College. When I was doing my after-school programs, which is a program called Project Effort. I don't know if you knew the name of it. But we started that 25 years ago, and it's going now. And what we do is we provide opportunities for kids to participate in physical activity, which are values-based, trying to teach them life skills with it. But we try to stay with the kids on up through high school. And the extension of that program is what we call a Youth Leader Corps program. And it's taking kids who are familiar with the values-based program that we worked on previously to apply it to other kids in the community. So I had this group of high school kids that were running the program for me, helping me out. And these kids did amazingly well when they were here. The problem is when they go back to their high school, they would still screw up. And a lot of them would go back. Some of them wouldn't go back. They wouldn't show up to school. Some of them showed up and caused problems. Some of them showed up and didn't do anything, just took up space. And that always was problematic for me. I said, geez, what I found is that the high school was not the place for them. The culture just was not something that was going to fit where they were. And so I always thought, let's start an alternative school.
Can you tell us a little bit about the upcoming TPSR Alliance conference that'll be?
Yes, I can.
Oh.
Hey, you were ready for that one.
we got a great group. These are people who are providing services for youth in different ways. Some of them are university people like myself.
Tell our listeners what TPSR stands for.
Oh, I will. Thank you. It's Teaching Personal and Social Responsibility.
Ah, nice.
And it's a model that was developed by a close colleague of mine, Don Hellison, who for years have worked with at-risk kids. He's a professor. He was a professor at University of Illinois, Chicago. Yeah. And anyway, Don's a real close colleague of mine, friend of ours. But he has this model that has been adopted by schools and programs that are in the community, youth-serving programs. And so what we wanted to do was to bring people together that are using this particular model to share what they're doing, to share ideas. And it started out fairly small in Chicago, and then it grew. And so we've had several years where each year these people come in. We have international people that use the model come in. And we have an agenda that really is kind of people sharing ideas, breakout groups. It's pretty informal in a way. So we decided to move it to Springfield one year, Springfield, Massachusetts. And then we went to Boston, had it there. And then we had it in New York City last year. And then we proposed to have it in Greensboro.
Boston, New York City, Greensboro. Yeah, they're all
perfect connection, right? Don't you think?
Right. Yeah, they're all major metropolitan areas.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, this summer we have that that conference coming up. It'll be June 7th and 8th. June 6th is kind of a, you know, little get-together, informal get-together, but the 7th and 8th is the major part of the program. And it's a great one. Everybody that comes, we come away, nobody's got any hidden agendas. It's all sharing what we do, helping each other out, you know, just applauding some of the things that people are doing, trying things out. We just started also, this year is our first year, we have a TPSR Alliance Award that we give mm-hmm. to a practitioner who is using this program in a practitioner who's using it in their school or in their community program. And so we have our first award winner coming in from Virginia, okay. who's in a middle school using TPSR. Oh, cool. So it's really cool, yeah. And so you guys are love to have you there. It's it's a great opportunity. I hope, Michael might have told you about it.
Michael has tables.
Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of our deal with just kind of a annual event that really celebrates the spirit of TPSR and Don's work too.
Great. As a beer practitioner, would you like another one?
Oh, I'd love one. That's great.
Marianne, was that a
that was feed a pass me? One. That was a feed me.
That'd be great. Right? Sure.
So as I crack open a beer, without
closer to the mic.
Right, closer to the mic.
Well, she tried.
Oh my I got God. The tail end of it. So
don't hurt yourself.
So you, at one point in time, were chair of the University Promotion and Tenure Committee. Is that correct?
I was.
You were
last year.
Oh, last year.
Yeah.
So recent history, recent memories. Now, I guess this question is especially for Justin and Jeremy because they still have to go up for the P and the T. I have the T, but I still have one P left. So what was that like? What was that experience like, having that much power and having to over... Weren't there a lot of cases last year?
We had nine.
Okay.
Nine cases.
Okay.
Eight of them, I think, were full professor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. And then we had one that was going from assistant to associate. And I'll be honest with you, everyone was strong. And my advice to anybody that you guys going up eventually is just make sure you have all your ducks in a row and, you know, you have a strong, strong case. So that...
What are these ducks
that you speak of?
You know, the main thing is... You know, it used to be all research, but I think balance is really important that we're looking at right now. Mm-hmm. And the work that you guys are doing, and Justin, you know, do it. But, you know, somehow you want to balance that research and service together. And, you know, I'd say most of them were all able to do it. And you got to get it out there. You know, publication is still a...
It's still the name of the game on some level. Now,
but
I do think,
you know, for me, the lens that I look at is not just so much the public, because, you know, to be honest, publication, you can publish.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of ways to publish. So, but
Justin and I have both written op-eds now as I glare across the table at Jeremy. So I think the
the local paper.
In the local paper. Oh, ouch.
What's wrong with that?
Hey.
Nothing wrong with that.
Well, how would you advise I guess all three of us, because at some point in time, all three of us will have to talk about that. How do we talk about a podcast? Where we
is this of any value?
I think that's what you look at.
Yeah.
I think that's your best product. I mean, especially if you're into, you know, applied work.
Right.
And you want to reach practitioners. Practitioners aren't going to read your research journal.
No.
I can tell you that right now. But they're gonna listen to what you have. They're going to, if you're doing workshops, if you're doing kind of community types of outreach services, stuff like this, which reaches a different audience, to me, that is your best. That's your best ally, and that's what I look at, you know. So, but everybody has a different lens, you know.
Right.
Sitting on that committee, you're going to still have people that are going to look at it a little differently.
From the classical view?
Right. Well,
I'm afraid so. But that's, you know, that's it. But I just really, I just think people have to kind of look at how you can get that out there
and own what you've got, too.
Yeah, that's right.
This dovetails nicely into a conversation about the current state of academia, and you've expressed aversion to that in some ways through what you've said. So where do you think academia stands right now, and do you see it taking a positive trajectory?
I can speak relative to the UNCG campus and to a certain extent to a lot of others, but I think when there is more of an emphasis for universities to be accountable, especially state universities, to be accountable to their people in the state. And
you mean the state legislature in particular, or do you mean just people?
People
citizens
in general,
general
to be accountable to what are you doing for us?
Yeah.
And I think one thing that has happened with UNCG is they have, from where I when I've been here, it kind of everybody did their own thing. It was I wouldn't say there was some, but there wasn't a lot of community outreach types of effort. Mm-hmm. And then right now, I think we have a totally different view. It has extended, I think, the reach to be more community engaged. The fact that we have the Carnegie classification tied onto us is a reflection of what we've been doing and how we've evolved to that. Because I think that is so critical for universities. So I think more universities are sliding that way. And I think that's a good thing. You know, I think the idea that, you know, you're able to get professors, academicians to be able to extend beyond just what their research is to provide different types of programs, different types of outreach efforts. And I think that has been especially true with UNCG. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a really good push. So given that, that's something that a professor who comes in, a new professor comes in, is interested in doing the kind of work you guys are doing.
And there is a pressure now, I think, to move away from just the research, but to show how your research has
meaning. That's what I mean, yeah. Right.
And how do you think the university might have to change some of its structures and ways of thinking? And I'm almost asking you to connect this to your role on the promotion and tenure committee in that, like, I know, for example, my department has an expectation that you're generally going to have at least one publication a year. But when you're doing community engaged and applied work, that you get hit by curveballs all the time that might upset that process. And so, I just had a conversation with my department head where I said, yeah, this year might not have looked as good as other years, but when you look at me in the long run, I've got this pattern almost of every other year I'm incredibly productive. And then it's like, because of my community engaged work, I need this other year to get through all of it, because coordinating all of those people, I've had Heidi Carlone, who's in School of Education, has said it's like corralling a moving target, and that takes time. So are there ways that the university has to change in its way of thinking and its way of evaluating its faculty in order to keep this community engagement focus alive? Because I will tell you, I am burned out in some cases. Yeah. I love working with the community, but to think about it on the university schedule is sometimes kind of baffling.
You know, Marianne, I think I don't think it's so much a university problem as it is departmental. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I think the university is, as I say, I think in a broader sense, it's really trying to establish itself as a community engaged university. Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
What happens, I think, at the department level is departments still hold on to a lot of the traditional forms.
Yeah.
And regarding your situation, I always think it's, and I think our department does a pretty good job of that, is define what your role is. What is your mm-hmm. focus? And if you come in with your department head and says, I want to do this, develop this program that is going to be helping mothers take better care of their kids or whatever, I don't know, child care. That is my role, and I'm going to develop a program for this. And you put that on there. That is what you should be rewarded. It's not what I publish. Mm. And I think some departments do that. We have, you can define what you want to define as your major focus. Mm-hmm. And So that's what you're evaluated on. So
Control the front end of the conversation more.
What's that?
Control the front end of the conversation more.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that, well, and you got to, you know, and your department head,
yeah,
whoever it is, has to kind of support that.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, we've been able to do that. We go, I think the kinesiology department, I think we have gone way above that. We really try to have everybody's roles different. I mean,
yeah,
we have people that are putting out maybe 12 articles a year.
Mm-hmm.
Can you believe that?
Chris Ray?
12 articles a year. Yeah. So, you know, but that's their deal. But that's what they're doing.
Right.
So that's their thing. You know, your research, you know, this is what you're expected to do. You know, if you're planning to develop these different types of outreach efforts, different types of programs, that's what you're expected to do. So, you know, it's a different lens that we look at faculty with.
So you need to
say,
I need to be drinking with liquid philosophy. That's my eminence measure.
That's
what I'm going to go up pretending
for. You're going to put that under?
Drinking beers, I think I can fly.
I'm
going to
purposefully get on the university P&T committee so that when you guys go up, so that when you have on your CV how many beers on average you drink during a liquid philosophy episode, I can say, all right, that is a sufficient number.
So I've heard that you're a not exactly a defensive driver. Would you like to comment on that?
God, where'd you get that one?
Well, numerous faculty in your department have expressed concern. So,
really, I have no idea.
Kind of car do you drive, and what do we need to watch out for on campus?
I have a red Caravan.
Okay.
With
okay.
the Cubs 14 on the license plate.
Oh.
And the Chicago Cubs front plate. So, but I have no idea.
So you can only be so reckless.
Where's that coming from?
You can
only
be so reckless in a Caravan.
I can't divulge that. Although at the conference, I will restate this question in front of the said person and see how they respond.
See how they respond to it. Does anybody else have any burning questions for Tom before we go ahead and
he's off my hot seat.
Kill our last beer and bring things to a close? Well, thank you very much, Tom Martinek, for joining us.
Thanks
and
for asking
one last
me.
Cheers. Oh, I have to pick up my half
full
beer.
Here we go.
All right, cheers to
this is great.
The summer of 2018.
Yeah.
I hope you're all having an excellent time. We will join you back in fall 2018 for the kickoff of our fall semester. Hopefully, we think we're going to keep this going.
We think we're coming back.
So, yeah.
We think they might renew us.
Right.
Really? So where does this go now?
I don't know.
Now it goes up online for the entire university here. So.
I have, it'll be up online, but I have a meeting with the provost in a couple of weeks, so maybe I should ask her to come out.
Right. That would be a great interview next. So we now have the provost challenge.
That'd be great. She'd be good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that brings our official first season of Liquid Philosophy to a close.
Woo-hoo!
Thank you to Press Play Studios for hosting us for our summer special. Make sure to check us out online at liquidphilosophy.com. That's where you can find all of our podcasts. I'm going to work this summer on getting us up on iTunes, so maybe you can find us there too.
Maybe.
But we're also on Facebook and Twitter, and so
make sure
to check that we are.
Again, she's the ringer.
How prevalently is a completely different story. I see what you've done here. You've just set this all up so that you have an easy out when you all go up for promotion in tenure.
School's out for the summer.
So on behalf of Jeremy Rinker and Justin Harmon, thank you for joining us for Liquid Philosophy.
And on behalf of Marianne.
This is Mary. I was going to say this is Marianne. Give me a chance to speak.
I got my quarter.
Hey. All right. Thanks for joining us and enjoy your summer.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for joining us for Liquid Philosophy. We hope you've enjoyed your time thinking and drinking with some local college professors about what we do and why it's important. We do take the topic of drinking very seriously, and we want to make sure that no one is out there drinking and driving. Stay safe, y'all. And if you feel like you're having a problem with alcohol or other drugs, please contact your campus health department or talk to your doctor. I should probably also mention that the views of Liquid Philosophy hosts and our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of the University of North Carolina at Greensboro or the UNC system. That should do it for the disclaimers.
Be sure to check us out on liquidphilosophy.com for archives of all of our past episodes and to keep up to date on all of our guests.